It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Hey, what's good, everybody? Welcome into The Porch, a VolQuest baseball podcast. Appreciate you guys for being here. I'm Eric Kane, your host in this episode, and the show is presented by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you, TN Trial Lawyers. They specialize in criminal defense, family law, personal injury, car wrecks, accidents, DUI, homicide, assault, all that and more. If you have a need, pick up the phone for a free consultation. Give my friends at Spivey King and Spivey LLP a call today at 423-245-4185. Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem? Let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers. A big weekend coming up. Tennessee baseball back in Southeastern Conference play on the road at Auburn. And had a midweek off this week, which I think was really, really good for this team. Team's battered and bruised. I mean, no team in the country is probably at 100% right now. It's not like football where you're going out there and tackling and hitting and taking hits and all that. But it's still a grind. It's an every single day grind, and you are sore and you tweak things. And when you're playing every single day and going through that process, sometimes it's hard, you know, to recover, or the recoveries are slowed down a little bit. So I think for the most part, you know, for Tennessee, not having a midweek game is kind of beneficial. And we'll talk with Luke here in a moment, and he'll kind of say, hey, you know, when you don't have a midweek game, it's not like you have an off day. You're still scrimmaging and all that. And I think that's true most of the time, but Tony Vitello on Thursday morning said when you have a younger team, you kind of go out there and scrimmage and do some things and kind of get after it. You're always working, don't get me wrong, but if you have a younger team, you kind of go out there and really get after it when you maybe have an absent midweek game during the season. But for this older team, really, it was a time just to kind of rest and recoup and recharge the battery. Tony Vitello kind of pitted this as their own little all-star break. And I think that makes a whole lot of sense. So what do we know about injuries heading into the season? Well, we do know A.J. Russell's not going to pitch this weekend. Injuries heading into the weekend. We do know that right-handed pitcher A.J. Russell's not going to pitch this weekend. That's no news. That's no shock. A lot of speculation on the board and all that. And I'll just say this, from speaking with some people close to A.J. Russell, close to the team, and, of course, some of my sources, I mean, Tennessee's not going to just throw him back out there and rush him back out there. I think it's pretty evident, you know, Tony Vitello, he continues to say, you know, regardless of whatever injury it is, they're going to be cautious. They're going to think about the kid's future. You know, he was talking about Garrett Crochet, and he was like, hey, we want another Garrett Crochet, and talking about A.J. Russell, and so we got to think about his future. So right now it's kind of taking a step back. It's resting. It's recouping. He says, you know, soreness and all that type of stuff. He recognizes, when describing the A.J. Russell injury, that it is vague responses. But he says it kind of is what it is. And so you got to take a step back before reevaluating, kind of getting back into it. So, again, the expectation, nothing's changed in terms of what I've heard. Having to continue to take a drink here because, as you guys know, my voice has been complete crap this week. Nothing's been different from what I've heard. The belief is that he's going to rest. They're going to, you know, kind of ease him back into some things. And that he's going to be available to go and give this team some innings towards the home stretch. I've kind of pinpointed the month of May. I think best case scenario would be 1st of May, but I don't know if that's, you know, likely at this time, or I don't know if that's, you know, set in stone at this time. I would pinpoint May, get a couple of appearances in there, and then hopefully be available to be utilizing a number of different roles, you know, come postseason play. But make no mistake about it, A.J. Russell's health is first and foremost for Tony Vitello, Frank Anderson, and everybody involved over there, Quentin Eberhardt. They're going to take care of him. So A.J. Russell's not going to be active this weekend, as we knew that. Billy Amick, Tony Vitello didn't say that he would not play, but he said probably not going to play. He'll be with the team, probably won't be active. Again, I would be absolutely shocked. I would be floored if Billy Amick played this weekend. So he'll be there with the team. He's been with the team. He's been doing more and more. And Tony Vitello kind of made mention of that on Thursday morning, that he'll kind of go in the facility and be like, what are you doing here? Like, why are you doing that? And he's like, don't worry. I'm clear to do this. I'm allowed to do this. So, you know, Billy Amick is itching to get back and to get in the flow of things. And he's a competitor. You would expect nothing less. And so Billy Amick is going to be out this weekend. Most likely I would consider him doubtful. So what does that mean for the left side of the infield? I think you should expect to continue to see a lot of Bargo at third, Ariel at short, and of course Dean Curley playing in the field somewhere. I think Dean's the constant there. He can play short, he can play third. He's been a really good bat for Tennessee, providing a whole lot of pop towards the bottom of the order. I would expect to see both Ariel play a little bit of short, Dalton Bargo play a little bit of third, but I would expect to see Dean Curley playing every game at some point, over there on the left side of the infield. Kovars Tears, I have been told, of course, he had a hamstring injury, kind of aggravated his hamstring, and that kind of went over my head on Saturday night last weekend as well, but he kind of aggravated his hamstring there, and he's on the bus. He will be available to play. He'll be on the active roster this weekend. I think that obviously they're going to be cautious with him. He will hit before he plays the outfield, in my opinion. So I would expect him to DH. I don't know if we'll see him in the outfield this weekend. If you do, that's a great sign. But they're going to be very, very cautious with him. So that's your cleanup hitter. That's the guy leading your team in average. I mean, he's having a fantastic year. And unfortunately for Tears, he just kind of keeps getting bogged down by these little injuries. Last year was a groin. Last year was a hamstring. This year it's a hamstring a little bit. So hopefully he'll continue to see at bats. He won't miss extended period of times. But like everybody, they're going to take it very cautious with him. So I would expect to see Kovars Tears DHing this weekend before seeing him in the outfield. So that means Robin Villeneuve is probably the odd man out, unless they get him a spot start, maybe in left field. But Rhys Chapman's going to play in right field. Hunter Ensley, he'll play in center field. Dylan Dreiling is, you know, continuing to kind of lead Tennessee. He kind of went through a little bit of a battle of a hamstring deal last week as well. But obviously he was fine. He had a monster weekend against Georgia. Andrew Beinke has been sidelined, I believe, the last two weekends. Tony Vitello said that he should be ready to go this weekend, which is huge. Another one of those lefties. That's my right hand. Lefties out of the pen, kind of a bridge guy. They need to start using him. They need to start using Dylan Loy. I've been beating the drum about these freshmen and Matthew Dallas and Derek Schaefer, and it was good to see them pitch last Friday. I mean, it was a game where Tennessee was going to lose, but they still didn't really, in my opinion, help themselves out. And now that Georgia lineup, it's good. That Georgia lineup top to bottom is good. I mean, probably one of the better lineups that Tennessee's going to see all year, in my opinion. So it was challenging, but Tennessee needs to continue to utilize some of those arms in the bullpen, because you can't bank on getting that effort from Kirby and Xander every single weekend. You take it, you applaud it, you love it for those guys. You don't expect it. Now, that doesn't mean you don't expect them to do things that will benefit the team or to pitch well, because I expect that from those guys. But I don't expect to get a combined 11 innings of three-run baseball between those two guys every weekend. It was incredible last weekend. But Tennessee, again, needs to be prepared. Marcus Phillips, Beinke, Loy, Matthew Dallas, Derek Schaefer, some of these other guys. They need to start kind of getting their toes wet in Southeastern Conference play. And I think that'll come this weekend. As far as the pitching, AJ Causey will go on Friday. Drew Beam will go on Saturday. It is officially TBD on Sunday, but safe to assume that Xander Seacrest will probably get that nod because he's earned it and because he's started each of the last two Sundays. When you look at Auburn, a very interesting ball club. So Auburn's record is not good. 16-11, 1-8 in SEC play. 1-8 in SEC play. They are much better than what their record indicates. They have had the gauntlet, just like Tennessee. Now, I mean, the SEC, that schedule, it's always a gauntlet. But remember last year when Tennessee opened up, you know, had Missouri, okay, whatever. But then it went over the course of a month. They had like Florida, Arkansas, LSU, had Vanderbilt at the tail end of that. That's kind of what Auburn's going through right now. they have played number 7 Vanderbilt, number 1 Arkansas, number 3 Texas A&M to begin their SEC schedule. And they've lost 3 games by 1 run. They've lost 2 other games by 2 runs. This is a team that is never really out of it. And, I mean, the pitching is all over the place, and I'll get to that here in a moment. But, you know, the lineup, give them credit. The batting order, give them credit. They're really never out of any ball games, and I think that's a big tip of the cap to that ball club. And that's why I think it's going to be a grind this weekend for sure. It's going to be a challenge for Tennessee's pitchers. You know, Auburn was picked to finish 5th in the SEC West prior to the season. Ike Irish, who was a utility player last year, he's catching a little more this year, DHing a little bit, playing some outfield. He's kind of the leader of the clubhouse. Bobby Pierce was a guy. He had all SEC honors kind of coming into the season. D1 Baseball did predict Auburn to be a regional team this year, so I think that's important to remember. But right now, it's not a regional team, but it's been in a lot of games. So don't be fooled. Do not be fooled by that 1-8 record in SEC play. It's like LSU right now. I'm not saying LSU is this juggernaut, the defending national champs that we thought coming into the year, but they're much better than what that record is. I think it's like 2-7 or whatever. LSU is much better than what that record is. Auburn is much better than what their record is in SEC play, which is 1-8. So speaking of that lineup, Cooper McMurray has been the guy that's leading the team in pretty much everything. He returned. He had double-digit home runs last year. He's got 11 home runs this year. That's a team high. He's batting .371. That's a team high. Slugging .794. On-base percentage .504. All those is team highs. He's a cleanup hitter. He's driven in 42 runs, which is second. He leads the team with 36 hits. He's second on the team with 36 hits and 8 doubles as well. Cooper McMurray is a really good player, hitting in the heart of that order. Ike Irish, who I mentioned a moment ago, playing a little bit of everything, but catching a lot more this year. He hits second in the order. He's got a second-best batting average of .363, second-most home runs of 10, leads the team with 45 runs driven in. He has 41 hits, which leads the program. Only player in the lineup that has over 100 at-bats so far this season at .113. But a really good player. And so Ike Irish, Cooper McMurray, kind of the top two dogs in that order. Mason Manners, left fielder, designated hitter, .340. Average so far this season, stolen 5 bases. Miami, Ohio transfer Cooper Weiss is a guy to watch out for. He's the everyday shortstop. He's your leadoff hitter, and he has stolen 24 of 27 bases so far this season. And he's hitting .319 at the plate, and he's walked 27 times. He just gets on base, but he will be a guy that's going to steal some bags. 24 of 27 stolen base attempts so far this season for Cooper Weiss. Center fielder Chris Stanford's been there a while. Right fielder Bobby Pierce, he was awarded preseason honors coming into the season, but he struggled at the plate, only .227. Third with 5 home runs, 19 ribbies. Bobby Pierce is a guy that's a player, but he struggled so far this season. Transfers De'Eric Fabian from Florida, you know that name. Javon Hernandez from Jacksonville State. They've kind of shored up that infield along with Cooper Weiss via the transfer portal. But both those guys, Fabian and Hernandez, really struggling at the plate this year, hitting .219 and .197 respectively. And they're everyday players for the most part. But Auburn team-wide, a .286 batting average. They've stolen 55 of 62 bases on the season. Keep in mind, 24 of those have come from Cooper Weiss. But this is a team that's going to test Tennessee's catchers. And I thought Sam Smith made a really good point. I don't like to give him credit a lot, but he made a really good point in one of the threads on Thursday on the board. You know, Tony continues to mention that Barco's going to catch at some point. I find it hard to believe that he'll catch this weekend because this team's going to be on the base pass running all over the place. Expect Cannon Peebles and expect, obviously, Cal Stark to be catching behind the plate. So those are the bats. Pretty good lineup. The pitching has been all over the place, literally. 2 TBDs for Saturday and Sunday for Auburn. But they're going to go with Dylan Watts, a right-handed sophomore, to start Friday's game. This will be his first start of the season. He's had really, really good numbers so far. Been one of the most relied upon guys out of the bullpen. Has a save for Auburn. He's appeared in 8 games, 2.77 ERA, an 0-0 record, so no record. He's going to get his first start for Auburn this weekend. But they've been all over the place in terms of starting pitching this year. Right-handed pitcher Connor McBride started each of the past 2 weeks on Friday. Right-handed pitcher Chase Alsep has started a lot this season on Saturday. And Joseph Gonzalez, who has ace-like tendencies, has started a lot this week. And he started out on Saturday, but he's been at Sunday the last couple of weeks. But man, his ERA is 7.91. Alsep's ERA is 7.02. McBride's ERA, all things considered, looks pretty good compared to the other two at 4.21. Those guys are not listed as starting pitchers this weekend, but they're going to start at some point and pitch heavily for Auburn. That's Connor McBride, a righty, Chase Alsep, a righty, and Joseph Gonzalez, a left-handed pitcher. A little bit more on those guys. Let's see here. The Auburn staff overall has a 5.19 ERA. Two starters the last 2 weekends with 7-plus ERAs. I mentioned that. Midweek hurler Connor McBride, who started the last two Fridays, he pitched like the first 5 or 6 weeks in the midweek and then went to the Friday night spot. Joseph Gonzalez, as I mentioned, he had a really, really good freshman year, was invited to USA Baseball, had some shoulder injuries as a sophomore, and has really never recovered. And so Joseph Gonzalez, the lefty, who I think everybody was banking on being the ace for this team, has not showed up to the park yet so far. A little bit more on McBride. First four starts of the season in the midweek. Was pushed to Friday the past 2 weekends in SEC play. He was solid 2 weeks ago during the Razorbacks, Arkansas, allowing one run over 4 innings. Struggled last weekend against Texas A&M. Gave up 6 runs over 6 hits and 3 innings of work. Little bit on Chase Alsop. He was the opening day starter for Auburn this year, Friday night roll, up until 2 weekends ago. He's a flamethrower, sits in the upper 90s. He's combined to give up 16 runs over 14 and two-thirds innings in league play this year, so that's obviously not a good mark. He's gone 6 innings twice this year, the latest coming against Arkansas on March 22nd, so he has found success in SEC play, albeit just one time. But overall, just been way too inconsistent, and that's Chase Alsop. For Gonzalez, he started the season off as the number 2 starter, has shifted to Sundays here of late, come out to go 19 innings and a third and 6 starts, so not very, the longevity's not there, 2-1 record with a 7.91 ERA, only 8 strikeouts with 13 walks. Control has been a huge issue for Joseph Gonzalez. So again, those guys are not listed as starters this weekend. A couple of TBDs in there. And of course, as I mentioned, Dylan Watts, he's been announced as the Friday night starter for Auburn. But they're going to pitch. And there's going to be opportunity there for Tennessee. Some bullpen arms to pay attention to. Carson Myers, 1-2 record, 4.74 ERA. He's a lefty. Christian Herbolz, he has a 1-1 record, 6.14 ERA. He's a righty. They've mixed in and out of the rotation at times this season. They've combined to make 9 starts over 15 appearances. Those guys could be some options. A righty, John Armstrong, 0-1 record, 2.08 ERA, 10 appearances. Will Cannon, he's a righty, 5.54 ERA, 9 appearances. They also have 1 save on the season. They've been used a lot. Highly touted freshman Cam Tilley, right-handed pitcher, 7.31 ERA, not good. 3-0 record, 9 appearances. He's totaled 16 innings out of the bullpen, so they're going to use him a lot. And then senior lefty Tanner Bauman is one of the guys they count on out of the bullpen as well. 12 appearances, 2-1 record, 4.61 ERA. So as you can see, the pitching has not been good. A little bit all over the place. What an opportunity for Tennessee's bats to take control of this game and kind of win some, maybe some high, you know, high scoring affairs. I think Causey's going to bounce back. I think Beam is going to bounce back. I truly do. But the pitching for Auburn is not good. So Tennessee will have an excellent, excellent opportunity this weekend to get to work. But more than anything, man, Tennessee's coming off 2 series wins in SEC play. The conference schedule this year has been really, really good at home for home teams. It's going to be a challenge for Tennessee on the road But they're going to meet that challenge on the SEC Network. All three games will be streamed there, starting Friday night at 7 o'clock, Saturday at 4:30, and Sunday at 2 o'clock. All those times are Eastern time. Let's get into Luke Lipsius, former Vol, currently tied with Blake Burke atop the career home run leaderboard for Tennessee. Blake Burke has an excellent opportunity to take over sole possession of first place of that this weekend. Christian Moore is three back at 37 career home runs. We'll get to Luke Lipsius here in a moment when we continue on with the porch here, getting ready for Tennessee and Auburn. But couldn't do the show, couldn't get you ready for Tennessee and Auburn without our friend Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you've got a problem, let them find a solution for you. T and Trial Lawyers, they specialize in criminal defense, family law, and personal injury, examples of which can be DUI, homicide, assault, personal injuries such as car wrecks and whatnot. They have over 80 years of combined experience. Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout the state and federal courts of Northeast Tennessee. The firm has a vast amount of trial experience. The practice has been in place for 43 years, with this specific partnership forming in 2012, while also having partners who are energized for today's modern legal demands. Practicing primarily in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, as well as Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas, the firm has won multiple awards. They have attorney rated by super lawyers in the Mid-South with real trial experience. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need help with a divorce, help with custody of your children, or have been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP is here to help you. Go see him in person at 142 Cherokee Street in Kingsport, Tennessee. Pick up the phone, call this number for a free consultation. That is 423-245-4185, or check him out at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. You got a problem? Let him find a solution for you. That's T and Trial Lawyers.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, Luke, it wasn't perfect. It didn't start out perfect at all on Friday night. Tennessee got run rolled 16-2, but Tennessee kind of bounced back, earned a really gritty victory, was down early in game two, kind of back and forth, came stormed back one game two, shut out Georgia in game three. Will Georgia be the best team Tennessee sees this year? No, but I thought that was a really good series win.
It was definitely a really good series win. That Georgia team deserves to be ranked. You know, they have almost as many wins as us. They've been playing good baseball. You know, they're a little iffy maybe at the pen and with their pitchers. But, like, that offense is going to carry them through to the postseason. And I would hate to be the team that ends up with them in their regional, because that's just – it's Wright State all over again. I thought it was a really good weekend. You know, it was a funky Friday just because I thought that umpire was squeezing them so much.
Yeah.
Causey was making good pitches. It's just when you got an umpire that's squeezing you like that against a team like Georgia, you're going to give up runs. It just sucks that it was whatever, 6 or 7 in one inning. And then, you know, we couldn't really counter back. Saturday's game was exactly how I saw every game of the weekend going. Basically a slugfest. We score 3, they score 4, we score 5 kind of deal, which is what it ended up being. Beam looked a little shaky. Kirby came in, looked amazing. And then I thought two craziest things. Xander pitched the game of his life on Sunday. I think what we're doing with him is really good. When we have Snead behind him, which is why I was so freaked out as to why we brought him in on Saturday, it ended up working out. I guess he has a rubber arm. I don't know. But also it does expose us, because we had 3 people at the pen, if you include, besides the Friday game, because you're throwing in random people. But, you know, we got 2 or 3 guys that we trust out the pen, and that just is not going to do it down the stretch when you start facing these elite teams. But overall, really good weekend. They had a whole week to rest up, which is really nice for the pitching staff, especially Snead. I'm excited. I was excited for this weekend. It was a really good one.
Yeah, a lot of good from this weekend, and that's kind of where I want to start. I want to ask you in a moment about starting pitching, but Kirby, what an effort. He threw 94 pitches, five innings, career high. And then you mentioned Xander, and they're literally just putting Xander out there and saying, hey, man, get us as many outs as you can. Mm-hmm. And if that's five, great. If that's 18, awesome. I mean, he six innings, 104 pitches or whatever. Those two were incredible. If you would have told me that Tennessee was going to get 11 innings, a three-run ball out of those two this weekend, I would have said you're crazy. But, mm-hmm. you know, Tony just continues to say, hey, you just continue to work. You're a good teammate. Good things are going to happen, and good things happen for both of those guys. Two fan favorites for sure.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And it's so great to see what Kirby's doing this year, especially, you know, I keep on going back to last year. It was disappointing. And then this year's coming in. He's actually, you know, that middle relief bridge guy. And he can, you know, what we've seen, he can go four or five innings. So what he did this weekend, amazing against that lineup. He's looking true to himself. He's looking the best he's ever looked. I love it out of him. And then it gives us that lefty out of the pen that we can bridge, you know, power righties or whatever we want to do down the stretch. And then, of course, like you said, I think that is legitimately the plan going forward is, hey, Xander, go as long as you can, which it's a good plan because you will end up like games like 2 weekends ago where, you know, he goes two innings. Sneed luckily picks him up. And then you got games like this weekend where he goes five or six or whatever it is. And, you know, you're left with a really good shot. I will say the fact that we got run ruled on Friday, it sucks. Yes. But also, you know, it was beneficial for us in the end. We also got some freshmen throwing out there to see what they can do. But yeah, out of those two lefties, absolutely amazing. It's nothing but good for, you know, the playoff push down the line.
Yeah. Again, there's questions about the bullpen. There's questions about pitching, but like the last 2 weekends, you've gotten these great efforts from some of these guys to where you really weren't taxed in terms of, okay, where do I go from here? Mm-hmm. You will be sooner or later. Don't get me wrong, but again, just what an effort from Xander and Kirby. I do want to ask you about starting pitching from your vantage point. You know, Causey's been so good this year. I don't think he was going to remain as dominant as he was, but I don't think he'll ever get rocked like he did the other night. From your vantage point, what was going wrong for him? You mentioned the umpire squeezing him a little bit, and I would agree. And then for Drew Beam, SEC numbers have not been great. We know what Beam can give you. He's done it for, you know, 2.5 years. But any cause for concern there?
Yeah, so I'll start with Causey. You know, I didn't think he looked all that bad. The only thing he was missing, you know, in the fat part of the plate. But, like, when an umpire is squeezing you that much, you basically have to miss there. So I almost want to discount this weekend because, like, he was making pitches that I've seen called strikes, you know, 99 times out of 100. Yeah. And this guy, for whatever reason, with the two biggest offenses in the SEC, if not the nation, wanted to squeeze. So I don't know. I kind of discount this weekend. You know, maybe it'll be good for Causey. I'll have, you know, one of those bounce back games. He's already gotten a bad one out of the way. So hopefully he leaves it at that. But like you said, I don't think he'll get rocked anywhere near like that throughout the rest of the season. But then, Beam has not looked true to form. He was weird because that Saturday guy was definitely giving, you know, a ball off the plate and Beam was still missing fat, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was consistently bad. It was like he'd make a good pitch, and then his two-strike pitch would be a bad pitch. I will also say the seven runs that they put up against him are very, very not telling of what actually happened because in that inning that they scored three or four, whatever it was, you had a misread by KT, which that should, I mean, it happens, but also, you know, you're good enough to make it not happen. The play with Simo, I call that a hit, you know, it was hit hard, but then the ground ball that gets through Burke's wickets, that cannot happen in those situations. You change at least two of those into outs and you got just them scoring two runs, carrying into, you know, three, four, five. It's a whole different ball game. So I will say, as far as what Beam had to deal with, I think was at like 60 pitches through three. It's one of those things where, you know, you don't want to blame the defense, but also like, come on defense, you got to get his back with the guy who, you know, honestly hasn't looked his best over the past few weekends. But again, like he was missing, you know, in two strike counts and doing all that. I'm not too concerned. It's just one of those things where, you know, you'd like to see a little bit better from both him and the defense.
you know, hindsight 2020 all the time, and people can question in-game management moves from Tony Vitello over the years, and that's fine. I mean, that comes with the territory. But he was right on Saturday. Tennessee was down, you know, is that back and forth early on. I think Tennessee was down 3 or 4 runs, whatever the case was. And you needed offense. And so you pinch hit for Ariel Antigua with Dalton Bargo, who's playing on a bum hammy. And he gets a, you know, opposite field single, starts the rally, and 6 runs in that inning. And he hits a grand slam later on, had to earn the start, played a good third base on Sunday. Dalton Bargo, just another example of how this staff recruits traditionally and, of course, through the portal with him. And how you have so many different options. I mean, Tennessee's kind of banged up right now. Some hamstring issues all over the place. Reese Chapman comes in. Reese Chapman's hitting over 400 now. So, again, it just kind of goes and shows you that nobody's safe in this order. The guys who are not everyday players can step in and make a huge difference. And Dalton Bargo had a huge weekend.
Yeah, it's funny because early on in the season, you know, I wasn't really on Bargo. I was like, oh, you know, Missouri transfer, blah, 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 whatever. But I am on him now. He's just doing what he needs to do. He's collecting RBIs when he needs to, and then he's hitting the ball out of the park as well when it's a big situation. So he's been doing so well. Reese Chapman is another guy that you can just plug and play whenever you want. You know, if you need a DH late in the game, or not a DH, you need a pinch hit late in the game, you can plug him in. You can plug him in as a starter on the weekend. He'll do just fine. So again, options and competition. That's what you want to see during these, you know, middle of the SEC weeks where you got a kind of a solidified lineup. You know, we know that Dryling's going to play, you know, Friday, and then Ensley's going to play on Saturday, which I've always thought was funky because there's been, I think it's back-to-back weekends that a lefty started on Friday and we have Chapman in the outfield. And then the next day it's a righty and Ensley's in the outfield. And I'm like, all right, maybe Chapman hits better against lefties, whatever. But either way, it's one of those moves that you can make and you can, you know, switch around whatever you want. And I just think it's great for the offense and for whatever Tony V wants to do.
I want to ask you a question about this as well. Biggest mystery so far this season for me is Cannon Peebles. From a hitting perspective, what is he doing wrong? Is he just simply pressing too much? Because, again, the dude was just absolutely raking in the offseason. And maybe he's a full-time catcher now, so where he was so successful last year, he was just hitting. Maybe they should just let him DH for a couple games to get him going. They need to get him going a little bit. But, man, it's not been a good start to his Tennessee career, and that's shocking to me. Not saying it's over, but, I mean, that is shocking to me.
I mean, maybe it's the curse of the Tennessee catcher or something, like getting in your head. I mean, maybe Pav left over some residue, but you don't know what's wrong because like the swing plays, it's just I think he's so deep in his head. And like you said, he's just thinking too much. Because you could tell by the at bats, he's taking good pitches, he's swinging at bad pitches. He looks way off time and just like up there pressing. And it's one of those things you want him to come around. But like we're going into our third week or fourth week of the SEC. I lose track. It's about time, you know. And if it hasn't happened now, it's going to be a scratch and claw your way out. I remember 2021, for whatever reason, the whole team was first team All-Americans in the spring, and then we just could not hit in our little preseason. And then when spring came around, we just couldn't hit. So everyone's feeling like they're scratching and clawing out of a hole. And you know, I know that's how he feels. And he probably feels even more pressure. It's his first season. He was supposed to be the highest transfer in the portal, whatever. It's one of those things that he just has to sit back and relax and know that what he does is going to be good enough. It's just how do you communicate that to him?
Who is Tennessee's most dangerous hitter in the order?
Well, I think Burke right now. It looks so good, you know. But that's such a loaded question. I mean, Dryling hit 2 homers on Saturday.
Okay. So that's the whole point. Like, I was doing an exercise because, like, when we talk about Tennessee's dangerous hitters, we say Burke, Simo, Bargo, like, whoever the case is. It's like third. You said him second, which I'm glad you kind of proved my point. But, like, for me and some others, it's like third or fourth that before we even mentioned Dylan Dryling. And he is having such a good year, leading the team by RBI by 10, I believe. Mm-hmm. Tied for the team lead in home runs with 10. Dude's going to go get drafted this year. He's a draft-eligible sophomore. He's incredible. Had another big weekend, grand slam, or I can't even remember. Yeah, he had a grand slam. I mean, he had a 2-home run game. He's been phenomenal, man, and I feel like he's so underrated.
Yeah, well, it's so funny because you almost get overshadowed by the narrative, and it's probably just because he's not hitting that in that, you know, top four spot. He's hitting five or six or whatever it is. But like I said, the best hitter on your team is going to be the one that creates the most runs, which is RBIs and runs scored. And that's what he's doing. So I think, but like just by those metrics, he is our best hitter on the team. But like you said, I mean, he gets recognition. I think it's just because you got a little bit more, you know, veteran status in Burke and Simo. And then you got KT who can hit the ball, you know, a mile, but even Dreiling can still hit the ball pretty far. But it's like you said, one of those things, like who is the hottest hitter? You know, it's the person on that day. We're probably going to have two of them. But yeah, what Dreiling's been doing this year is special. It almost snuck out of nowhere. I don't know. It's one of those weird things, but either way, I hope he keeps it up.
Yeah, no doubt. Last year, he couldn't hit left-handed pitching. This year, he is torching left-handed pitching for sure. What was your text to Blake Burke when he tied your record?
I'm waiting until he breaks it. No one cares about ties. I don't know. I will say I texted Russell. I said, how's third place feel?
Love it. Well, let's move to Auburn now, man. I don't expect you to be a you know, you have a watch every single game they played, but you look at their record, 16-11, 1-8 in conference play. They are so much better than 1-8. They've been in pretty much every game. They played Vanderbilt. They played Arkansas. They just played A&M. Arguably, I mean, I know Florida's not in that or LSU, but arguably three of the best teams in the SEC, and of course Tennessee. But they've had a tough road of late. How do you approach a weekend like this when you can't look at the record because you know they're so much better than that?
Yeah, so, I mean, any smart player, which is what our guys are, is going to realize, like, hey, not only have they played really good competition, they're only losing these games by one or two runs. You know, you mix in, like, a run rule, maybe one of the games, but either way, they're playing them really close, which means this team is going to come out and they're going to be good. They've already seen, you know, quote-unquote, the best. So they're not going to be scared of Tennessee. They're also playing at home, which gives them a little more juice. But we're just going to have to go out and play our game. You know, it sucks. I think Amick and Russell will still be out. So we're going to have some people step up, especially in that bullpen. But, you know, it's going to be a lot like this weekend, not as much as offense. But as far as pitching staff goes, they're going to be fairly stock righties, you know, sitting low 90s with some good off speed. And then, you know, they have some good arms out the pen. But they're going to be a really good team. They're going to do things right. And they can also smack the ball around like Irish and that McConnelly or whatever their big first baseman is. They both hit the ball really well. So they're going to put up a really good fight, and I hope we do too.
So this week, there's always one week. It feels like it's towards the end of the season, but it's not really the case this year. But no midweek game. You guys are still practicing and going about your business, but how much of a benefit is that to not have a midweek game, or is it almost feel like you're kind of out of your routine? I think because Tennessee's kind of dealing with some nagging injuries right now, it's a good thing. But how did you kind of approach those weeks where on Tuesday and Wednesday you're not playing?
Yeah. So for one, it is good just because it gives you that kind of extra day of rest, so to speak, which is really good for us right now. I will say whenever there wasn't a midweek, you know, your first thought is like, oh, like extra rest. That's not the case really with the Tennessee team. The people that need to rest will rest, but I guarantee you they scrimmaged either Tuesday or today, which is never fun during season. Like usually you have, you know, live ABs on a Monday and then you play on Tuesday or whatever, but they probably did, you know, a 3-6 inning thing, probably with, you know, the staff that hasn't gotten much in there, and then they're going to give extra ABs to the guys that aren't doing well. But it's, you would much rather play on a Tuesday than have a week off, even though, you know, on paper it's a week off. It's not a week off, especially with any Tony V team. They're going to be out there grinding, and you have to play against yourself, and nobody wants to do that.
Especially when you're really, really good.
Yeah, exactly. It makes it even worse.
So I asked you this question the first couple weeks of the season, but I want to ask you again, three SEC series in, is this team kind of where you thought it would be? Is this team better, or does this team lack in certain areas that you thought that it wouldn't lack in? Kind of what's your overall thoughts of this team officially over halfway through the season, but really just getting going in SEC play?
Yeah, overall, they're about where I expected them to be. as far as getting things done in the midweeks, because the midweeks are the games that are going to get you into regionals and the postseason. As far as doing that, we have yet to lose a midweek, thank goodness. So we are showing that, you know, we're not just going to come to play when it matters. We're going to, you know, be always locked in. I think that's a really good teller of a good team. But then as far as SEC play goes, you know, we've shown brilliance, but we've also shown, like, what are we doing? That Alabama series was just so disappointing. You were that close to being what it would be, having one or two more wins. So some of the losses, I will say, are a little disappointing. But as far as overall ball play, we're doing really good. You know, people are getting really consistent at the plate. We're playing good defense. The one question that I did not think would be as much of a problem is that bullpen. And I am worried if, you know, we're going to need a freshman to step up, and then we're going to need, you know, one more lefty, and then hopefully a righty that they trust, whether it be Phillips or Combs. But it's one of those things that you got to figure it out. It's coming sooner than later.
Yeah, no doubt. And again, I think, it's hard to believe you're three SEC series in. Marcus Phillips hasn't even pitched against an SEC team yet.
Yep.
Exactly. Because he's had some injuries and whatnot. And, he's going to be a guy. Combs is going to be a guy that they're going to throw. Now they need to obviously pitch well. Obviously Kirby, Stamos, mm-hmm. Binky, a little bit banged up right now, but Binky's going to be a guy. And, you know, outside of that though, they don't have many that they can trust. But again, hopefully as the season goes on, they can kind of figure some of those guys out. What's your prediction for this weekend? I know that it's hard to play fortune teller, but, you know, teams on the road in the SEC so far, it's early going, haven't panned out too well, and Tennessee's going on the road to the Plains this weekend.
So I think that Causey's going to have a bounce-back game. I think Friday will win. I don't want to say handily, because nothing's handily, but I think we're going to play well on Friday. I think Saturday, Beam is going to shake out of whatever funk he's been in. And then I think by the end of the weekend, I will no longer be the home run leader. So, you know, it's a happy sad, right?
It is bittersweet, but also, like, you can still take credit for Blake Burke. You'd be like, taught him everything I know, not only at the plate, but also at first base. I mean, literally, I handed him the job. So you can still claim a lot.
Exactly. I'll be, like, piggybacking off of his success.
There you go. And then, you know, somebody will break his record in 2 years. So then after that,
Exactly. And then I'll just, like, stay quiet.
All right, Luke, as always, man, appreciate it. We'll see what happens this weekend for Tennessee baseball.
Yeah, can't wait for it.
Awesome stuff as always. Checking out Tennessee versus Auburn with VFL Luke Lipsius. Always appreciate his insight and what he has to bring to the table. Appreciate you guys for tuning in to this edition of The Porch. Here's to hoping that my voice is better by next week. The weekend, I'll just not talk to anybody, and we can rest my voice. I know it's kind of hard, it's a strain on the ears, but nonetheless, appreciate you guys for being here. A great opportunity for Tennessee baseball, really is. Auburn again, it's a team that is not as bad as the record indicates, but you still need to take care of some business because you still know the series that are to come for Tennessee baseball. So take care of business. We'll see what happens. Appreciate you guys as always for tuning in here to the Porch of AllQuest Baseball Podcast, presented by our friends Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That's TN Trial Lawyers. Let's see what Tennessee does on the Plains this weekend. It's Tennessee against Auburn, and we'll cover it, and we'll have all the action for you over at AllQuest.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.